Technorama episode CDX CIX.
That's Roman numerals.
Next stop, 500.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Excuse me, can you spare a penny? I mean, can you find a coin machine that can help me count out these 499
Over
pennies?
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here's your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
If timing is everything, we've got nothing.
I work so hard on that.
Every week, we go through thousands of articles on the internet, narrow it down to dozens of candidates, and we come up with this steaming pile of...
And this is the best we can do.
Every week. What is wrong with us? Welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. Listener, viewer, watcher... You may not be watching. You have this in the background. You're just listening. That's good enough for us. Thank you. I am Chuck Tomasi, coming to you from sunny, well, now dark Phoenix, Arizona, because the sun went down. And joining me, as always, is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I am great. I'm excited because we're almost at episode 500.
Almost. It seems to take longer and longer to get each 100 increment. I think we got the first one in like 5 months.
Well, we were doing like... What were we doing, like two shows?
Initially, we were doing this twice a week. In fact, our tagline for a while was, feed your inner geek twice a week. That burned out quickly. There are some days when I'm going through the news feeds, I go, wow, we could make a show just off of the things I found today.
Well, that inner geek got a little too fat, so we had to back off.
Hey, do us a favor and share this video or subscribe to it on YouTube and let your friends know you think we're weird too. That's about what it comes up. We've got
be weird
things.
With us.
We've got many things in the show tonight. I want to jump into the feedback.
Message for you, son.
We've got a message, and our question of the week last week was, what is your favorite opening movie scene? We did not give you a genre on purpose. Lone Guy's Night said The Matrix. And I am struggling to remember the opening scene of The Matrix. I mean, I remember he was working in the office environment, wasn't it? It was kind of a dull scene, if I remember right.
Oh my gosh. I can't remember the opening of The Matrix.
Okay, well, for somebody it was memorable. Brian Witt.
Didn't they have these words that kind of scrawled off into space? No, that's Star Wars.
crawl. Brian, I'm going to have to go back and watch it. As many times as we've seen The Matrix, the opening just doesn't jump out at me. Brian Witt from Appleton says, I always liked the opening to Serenity. That's a good one, too.
Yeah, I would think so. Yes.
Kevin O'Connor, a.k.a. TD0013, says, Pee-wee's Big Adventure. You knew exactly what you were in for in the first few minutes of the movie. When I first read that, I thought it said, you knew exactly where you were in the first few minutes, which you do also.
So he's talking about the Rube Goldberg machine.
Yes.
Yeah. And actually, I was hooked with it. You're right. He's exactly right. I was hooked when I saw that scene. Right when the movie opened, I was like, okay, I'm in.
I'm kind of surprised that he gave us that answer. I wouldn't have expected Pee Wee Herman from that man. Okay. He didn't say he loved the movie. It was just memorable. Oh, no, it does say favorite. Favorite opening movie scene, not memorable. Yeah,
that's true.
Favorite. Yeah. He also said another favorite is Mad Max Fury Road. I think I've only seen that once, so I can't really put my finger on the opening.
I'm trying to remember that one, too.
Weber Baker says, you didn't specify a genre on purpose. He says, Patton. And I don't know if I've seen Patton all the way through. I know I've seen bits and pieces of it.
Hey, Chuck, maybe we should have checked out YouTube on some of these before.
I don't think Patton and many of Matrix, well, maybe the opening scenes are. But if you put the whole thing up there, you'll get shot down.
Oh, this is a good one.
Go ahead.
Contact. I love
Paul Parkinson. There's another one I haven't seen all the way through.
Well, you haven't seen Contact all the way through?
No, it's on my bucket list.
Do you remember the opening to that?
Did it have to do with the very large array?
No. So the reason I think this is a good one, because it's very memorable to me, because you're in the theater. When I saw it, I was in the theater, and it gets dark, of course, and then they start backing away from Earth, and mm-hmm. you hear all these older radio shows as they get further away, because they're illustrating that all the radio transmissions are emitting from Earth. So there, as you're backing away, you hear older shows, and
finally, I'm home. Hey, okay.
But finally gets to the point where it's silent, and it was like you could barely hear something, and then that fades away. And I'm in the theater, it's all dark, and you hear nothing. All of a sudden,
that's creative. I like that.
It was fantastic. I love that.
Clinton says Patton opens up with, I think it was George C. Scott, in front of the big American flag doing his speech. I do remember that. I have seen that. Opening. Yeah.
Of course.
Yorga Schrowen says Saving Private Ryan. Maybe that's because it took place on his doorstep. Just about.
Wow. Yeah.
That was good, too. Joe Fiore, Crazy Joe, says Desperado has some pretty good opening scenes. That said, and here's another surprising one that just doesn't jump out on my plate. Boogie Nights gets my vote.
Mm-hmm.
The long Steadicam shot through Maurice's nightclub introducing all the principal characters.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Okay. I'm going to have to take your word for it. I was not a Boogie Nights or... What was the other
you
one?
You need to get out more. You need to get out more.
What was the one? Electric Boogaloo?
Yeah.
Breakdance 2, Electric Boogaloo. Okay. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah.
Trampas Whiteman says Spaceballs. There you go. We were. That was one of the ones in my mind that I was going to put up there, but I didn't want to spoil the sauce. Gary Phillips says Sleepless in Seattle. Brett Sheely, Touch of Evil. Have you seen Touch of Evil?
No, I have not.
Nor have I. So there's another one. I love it when people do this, because now we know there's some other movies out there that we can go look up and watch, see if they're on Netflix or wherever we can find them, and go watch them and understand why you think this is a wonderful opening scene.
I'm going to, for the few that I don't remember, I'm actually going to go back and look. I'm going to go watch these.
I'm going to watch some of my favorites, too, and go reassess the opening scene from a lot of my favorites.
I mean... Sleepless in Seattle. You got mail.
Stu Mayhew, who I'm assuming may or may not be related to Peter Mayhew. He says, Jaws, I haven't swam in the sea at night since.
Good
point. Or 2001, A Space Odyssey. Yep. Good stuff.
That's a great one.
Cynthia Fry. I'm sorry. I just threw out a reference. I don't know if anybody caught that. Yep. Land Before Time.
No.
Cynthia Fry, depends on what you're going for. Here's a couple answers. Best Monologue, Train Spotting. Most Iconic, 2001, A Space Odyssey. Most Touching, Up.
Oh, my gosh.
And if you read this incorrectly, it says Most Touching, Up.
Yeah, Most Touching, Up. Actually, with Up, I'm going to tell you, if you were an adult watching the theater, you know, like 30 on up.
Mm-hmm.
If that opening scene doesn't pull on your heartstring, I don't know. There's something wrong with you.
I thought the opening scene to the first J.J. Abrams Star Trek was good, too. The way they kind of zoomed in on the twisting Kelvin and the whole Nero coming through the black hole thing.
You know, the thing I liked about the newer Star Trek movies is they kind of shown the ships in odd angles, like you said, rotating.
Yeah.
And you're like... Okay, well, they're in space.
Exactly. Exact XYZ coordinate in space.
I think Clinton had this conversation on a Facebook.
Was that the post. One where why don't the ships ever come in at weird angles? Derp.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a cartoon where it had one was upside down or something. Right.
It was for cinematic only. Why do spaceships in Star Trek always meet nose to nose or close to it? Or
they're in orbit in the right orientation.
Right. Yeah. Because they don't have to be. One can be totally out of kilter for the other. Yeah. Beam on over. You'll get it's worse than jet lag. Scott Stephanie Long says Avengers Age of Ultron. We'll try this again. Opens with the action right away.
It does.
And yes, finally, John Miller Jr., Superman the movie. I'm assuming he means the 1977 version one. Gets me every time.
Yeah, that would be with his parents loading him up in the, or unless he's talking about the science meeting council thing. I don't think he's talking about that part. It gets him every time. Gets him right in the feels when they're telling Jor-El that he's full of it. Actually, I mentioned my
Kal-El. Huh? Here's your new Fisher Price scooter. Hop in.
Yeah. Here's your cellophane clothing. So, all right, what movie did you say was your favorite opening?
There's so many to choose from. I mean, there are some comedies that are really funny in the beginning too. But you know, you could take something like
Dumb and Dumber.
No. No, but Beverly Hills Cop, that's got a great opening.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, there's just so many movies out there that could possibly do that. Sorry, I hit a key and my cursor jumped to the top of the screen and I've lost all control of this Google Doc. What's on your list?
Well, I mentioned this last time, and that was the Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, that whole scene with the young Indiana Jones, and he's trying to get the car across the Coronado.
Yes.
I love that because it's like, you know, you're seeing another aspect of him you haven't really seen before.
I'd like to see that prequel fleshed out.
You might like take that and make it into a movie.
A young Indiana Jones. Yeah.
Well, there has been a TV show about that.
Oh, they can do better. You know, it's Hollywood. They can do everything three times and maybe get it right once.
Well, the young Indiana Jones, I think, was okay, but there were some good stuff in there. But yeah, you're right. I would love to have seen River Phoenix do a whole movie about that or something like that. That'd be awesome. Cool.
All right, we have one more bit of feedback. Yorga writes in, speaking of Raiders of the Lost Ark, we talked last mm-hmm. time about the submarine has been found off the Azores, the one that was portrayed in Raiders of the Lost Ark. He said, also, VIIC submarines, probably the 700 series, if Roman numerals. That would, VII is 7, C is 500, because this is episode CDX, CDIX. Mm-hmm. So that would be 7,500. You're right. D is 500. Okay, so that would be 7,100. You have to do some math. Okay. We're a little screwed up here. We're always screwed up. In that case, let's go to the history thing. Where's my history music? There it is. What are you playing it on a banjo this week?
That's right.
On this day in history for February 15, 2017, this is the 46th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 319 days remaining in 2017. It was on this date in 1493 that while on board the Nina, Christopher Columbus writes an open letter. Is that like open source?
Yes.
Widely distributed upon his return to Portugal, describing his discoveries and the unexpected items he came across in the New World.
Like that Fountain of Youth. No, yeah. That was somebody else.
That deer with antlers.
That's right. Also, February 15th, 1764, the city of St. Louis is established in Spanish Louisiana, which is now Missouri, USA.
We should have kept calling it Spanish Louisiana. That would have been fun.
Sounds more interesting, doesn't it?
February 15, 1946, ENIAC, the first electronic general purpose computer, is formally dedicated at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia.
It is also on this date in 1954 that Canada, I keep wanting to say Canada. I've made that joke too many times. I want to say it. That Canada and the United States agree to construct a distant early warning line of system of radar, a system of radar in the far northern Arctic regions of Canada and Alaska.
A new red and white maple leaf design is adopted as the flag of Canada, replacing the old Canadian flag, red ensign banner, on this date in 1965. Really? The maple leaf is only as old as I am. Interesting.
Wow, that is interesting. It was also on this date in 1971 that the dissimilation of British coinage is completed.
Not dissimilation, decimalization.
What's the difference? No. Yeah, anyway.
And we have our video clip for this week. We're both laughing.
Yeah. That's right. Anyway, it was completed on this on decimal day. Oh, there you go.
It decimal was completed on decimal day.
Hey, now it makes sense.
You know, because they used to have, what was it, guineas and shillings and crowns, and it was like, you know, 12 inches of the foot. It was as crazy as the English imperial system. It was 45 years ago today that that sound recordings are granted U.S. federal copyright protection for the first time.
And that same date in 1996, the Zhang
Xichang.
Xichang. No.
Keep going.
Xichang Satellite Launch Center in China, a Long March 3 rocket carrying an Intelsat 708 crashes in the rural village after liftoff, killing many people.
Many. An undisclosed number.
Yeah, no kidding.
It was also on this date in 2001 that the first draft of the completed human genome is published in Nature.
And it was also this day, 4 years ago today, as a matter of fact, that a meteor explodes over Russia, injuring 1,500 people as a shockwave blows out windows and rocks buildings. This happens unexpectedly, only hours after the expected closest ever approach of the larger and unrelated asteroid 2012 DA14.
Can you believe that was 4 years ago already? Wow.
I know.
How time
flies. I watched that video like a million times. It was like, wow.
Happy birthday goes out of the state to Italian astronomer, physicist, and mathematician Galileo Galilei. Can you do the fandango? Born on this date in 1564.
And Louis XV of France, born on this date in 1710.
Abraham Clark, the American surveyor, lawyer, and politician, was born 292 years ago today.
And Cyrus McCormick, American journalist and businessman, who founded the International Harvester, was born on the same date in 1809.
Charles Tiffany Lewis, the American businessman, founded Tiffany & Company, was born 205 years ago today.
And born February 15th, 1851, Romanian mathematician, astronomer, politician, 55th Romanian Minister of Internal Affairs, Spiru Herat.
That's a long title.
No kidding. Wow.
Miep Gies, Austrian-Dutch humanitarian, helped hide Anne Frank and her family, was born the same date in 1909. I wonder, it's spelled the same way as Donna's maiden name. I wonder if there's a relation there. Even though I didn't say it the right way, or the same way, is the Americanized version.
Well, I wouldn't be the one to ask. Turn around.
She's over here. Am I right?
American actor and comedian Harvey Korman was born 90 years ago today. I love that guy.
Oh, yeah. Blazing Saddles comes to mind right away.
Mm-hmm.
Also born the same date in 1934, Swiss computer scientist, the guy who created Pascal programming language, Nicholas Wirth.
And Roger B. Kraft.
Chaffee.
Chaffee. I should read these ahead of time. Roger B. Chaffee, the American lieutenant engineer astronaut, was also born 82 years ago today.
Also born that same date in 1954, American animator, producer, and screenwriter Matt Groening.
American engineer and astronaut Leland D. Melvin, born on this date in 1964.
Born the exact same date in 1964, American comedian and actor Chris Farley. Rest his soul.
I know. Another guy I love. That's awesome.
Happy birthday goes out of the state, February 15th. Philip from Australia. I know we mentioned him last week, but the show goes out this week. I made a mistake. The 18th is Ray Insoloco from Central Village, Connecticut. Scooter in Connecticut and Stephen Sumter were born on the 19th. That's the way it was on this date in history for February 15th, 2017. Yeah. Nailed that one.
Yeah. I actually delayed things on to make it line up.
I rushed through the birthdays to make up for it. Okay. John Miller Jr. says, Craig, you must have cheated on your SATs.
I'll never tell.
Hey, if you want to get on the Technorama birthday calendar, go over to chuckchat.com/wiki. It's right there. I feel like Grant Pachoco with the total of the advent calendar wreath thing. chuckchat.com/wiki. Get your name on there. Or did you know all of these events are published on our calendar, on Google Calendar? You can subscribe to it. What? If you go to our website, chuckchat.com/technorama. You'll see not only a little scrolling calendar over on the side, but you can subscribe to it for your own. And every time we post something there, you get the update. It's pretty cool. It's the way to go. We are ready for a break already. Holy Toledo. Oh. Let's do that break thing. We will be right back in uno momento. Oh.
Belly button biometrics, when only the highest level of security will do. Did you know that belly buttons, also sometimes called navels, are more unique than fingerprints? Protect your high security data with BBB, the 10,000 DPI scanner, now without the annoying sunburn. Belly button biometrics fits in great with today's bare midriff styles too. Make your passcode match your dress code with belly button biometrics.
Captain, I'm picking up a signal on subspace, audio only. It sounds like an advertisement for the early 21st century.
Sulu, where's Uhura?
On vacation.
Who the hell authorized that? Ah, you look terrible in a skirt.
Thank you, sir.
On speakers.
This is Adam Savage from Mythbusters, and you're listening to Technorama with Chuck and Craig.
That was pretty cool with the echo.
I know. I actually kind of like it.
Uno momento. Oh, that was unintended. That's just an artifact of the way we have that thing rigged up. All right. NASA plans to drill. Oh, we forgot the news thing, didn't we?
Yes.
Top secret news, everyone.
Okay. NASA, as many of you may know.
Not anymore.
It's been published in gizmodo.com. NASA is planning to drill in Europa's crust in search of life. In early 2016, a NASA-employed science definition team, or SDT, which I wouldn't use that as an acronym, of 21 researchers have been crafting a plan to send a robotic probe to Europa, an icy moon of Jupiter, located over 390 million miles from the Earth. On February 7th, that team delivered their first report to NASA detailing their recommendations for the future mission, which will search for life by drilling toward the subterranean ocean. Scientists strongly suspect to exist beneath the icy moon's surface. The team hopes to launch as soon as 2031. Which may sound like a long way off, but that's only 14 years. And think of what we were doing 14 years ago in 2003.
No, I don't want to.
Yeah. This is not to be confused with NASA's Europa flyby mission, which is slated to take place in the early 2020s. That said, the flyby mission will play a key role in the later landing of the mission, as it will use its cameras to scout out plumes or cracks where material from Europa's subterranean might ooze out. The lander will later visit these locations in order to take samples. Understanding Europa's surface and subsurface will help researchers plan for future lander missions to the moon. You were about to say?
Well, you know what scares me about these, and not necessarily about the mission itself, per se, but I start thinking, as I get older, there's a point when they say, you know, we're going to do this in 14 years and it might be outside of my lifespan. I want to know this stuff now. You know what I mean?
2031 should not be outside of your lifespan, no, Craig.
I'm not necessarily talking about this mission. I'm just saying in general, when they start saying, it's only 14 years away. But yeah, at some point in my life, the one thing, yeah, we're actually going to go and talk to life outside of Earth in 14 years.
If you follow the link through the show notes, you can see a video, which is very educational. I know not everybody has the same, what's it called when you're very excited about something?
Anticipation?
No, when you're as excited about space stuff as we are, that enthusiasm. Yes, thank you. Wonderful.
That was the word I was going to use.
Yes, as soon as we could look it up in one of those synonym dictionary things. A thesaurus, yes. So right. the they strongly believe that Europa has a liquid ocean, which could be up to 10 times deeper than Earth's. There's a lot of water out there. And they believe it's liquid because Jupiter's gravity is pulling, tidally tugging and stretching Europa to generate heat. Unlike our heat, which we're in the Goldilocks zone, so there's liquid water. There's this more, almost like a, you know, when you take a rubber band and you stretch it and stretch it and stretch it, it gets, that's how they're generating heat. And then when it gets to the surface, it's kind of crusted. But the icy crust is 11 to 15 miles thick. So let's just say we sent a probe out to Jupiter or out to Europa, and it sits on the surface, and they find a likely place where they can get through. Oh, maybe at a thin spot of 11 miles, and it starts boring down into the ice, and it finds this liquid. I suspect they'd have to have some sort of transponder, relay station, whatever, on the icy surface, and hope that, you know, some of this tidal stretching and forcing doesn't cause ice quakes and shake it apart or make it fall into a crevasse or something. You find a relatively stable place to put this.
Sure.
Can you transmit a signal through 11 miles of ice? That's my biggest question right now. What do you need to do to transmit a signal like that? That's a lot of solid material.
Actually, that's the key right there. It's solid material.
Okay.
You can send a radio signal in water much easier than you can through the air.
Because
it's solid.
You can sound travels faster through water. But you're not transmitting sound.
Well, if you have something,
it would have to be some sort of radio signal.
No, wait a minute. If you had a probe goes down, lands on the ice, and then drops yet another probe to go down, it can transmit up and relay it out.
It would have to transmit through 11 miles of ice. It's not going to be sitting on the bottom going.
Well, hey, just imagine. Hey, what were you doing 14 years ago? Playing with your flip phone. Look what you got now.
Yeah, but whatever they launch is going to be obsolete the day it leaves the launch pad. It's kind of the car.
So just like my visit to the Verizon store.
Right. Hey, you got a Galaxy S6. Oh, tomorrow they announce the 7. What a bummer.
By the time you get out to the parking lot, it's obsolete.
All right. There are some questions that I have, and I'd love to talk to somebody who's more who's tied closer to that mission. Maybe we can get an interview with them.
Sounds like an interview. Oh, you just said that.
Yes, that's what I just said. Let's move on to the hacks and strange stories. Here's a story about a man who threw himself a rather interesting birthday party. Would you like to read on?
Sure. Let me pull up the link.
So on top of this.
Yeah, I know. Well, I know the link was there. Okay. Let's give me that. So there are these handful of shots of the Bob Ross themed birthday party that a 22-year-old Chris of South River, New Jersey, threw for himself. From what I gathered, this is the person writing, of course, basically involved watching an episode of The Joy of Painting with all the partygoers painting along with Bob. That's fun. It reminds me of one of the paint and wine events, evenings I've had with my friends, always posting on Facebook. Okay. Except for these paintings look a lot like they actually turned out okay. My friends, they aren't painters, that's not what paint and wine nights are all about. I'm sure it's more about the wine than the paint. But I'm sorry, that was my commentary. They're always having a good time with their friends. Plus, getting you so drunk that you puke on your canvas. See, that's how the paint works.
That's artist. I mean, that's art when you puke on your canvas. You can sell it for more.
But you can scroll down and see the pictures. Actually, they do look pretty good.
Some of these people are pretty good. They've either watched Bob Ross or have a lick of talent. Others look more like they're in my league.
You know what gets the reason I kind of threw this in here? One, I thought it was just funny that the guy threw his own Bob Ross party. He's only 22. I mean, the guy Bob Ross passed away about the time he was born or earlier?
You're right.
94? Was it 94? I think he passed away.
He's still an influence.
He is still an influence, and it's funny how he's kind of still around, and his show's on Netflix, and people watch it.
That's right.
Kind of funny.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
It is cool.
We have a shout out.
I like him.
Shout out to the chat room. Okay, I'm tempted to do one of these Bob Ross painting parties. We'd have to have a place to set that up. What do you think, Donna?
That would be the Technorama pool party.
Pool and painting party. The Technorama Bob Ross Rama party.
Then you got to go get yourself an afro and walk around that big wig.
We're going to paint some happy clouds because there's no happy clouds in Phoenix.
Not really.
The chat room has been buzzing while we were talking. Clinton mentioned, could the probe be tethered? That's a thought. Well, it would seem a bit fragile if it was 11 miles long.
I'd say that would be a lot of cable to carry.
To haul around. Yeah, it would.
I think that should go through with 802.11a.
John Miller Jr. says, who was Bob Ross's hairdresser?
I think that was the key. He didn't have one.
How do they know the liquid they find is water, says Tim Elliott. It's they've done a lot of science because of the gravity, the magnetic readings. There's a number of sensors that they've done on their flybys that say there's likely to be water there. They're really confident.
I think what they do is they do spectral analysis on the water and compare it to Dasani.
Dasani. I think we just came up with another Technorama. A skit. The finest drinking water from Europa Springs.
Well, I spent way too much time on this, but one of our posts for the podcast, I made it that Dasani from Water from Mars bottle.
Is it empty, full of sand? What is it?
Well, instead of a blue label, I made it red, you know, for Mars.
Okay.
Anyway. Spent way too much time on it. Nobody appreciated it.
Thank you for joining us. We are around on Sunday nights at 9:30. However, we will not be around next weekend. We're
going to make you wait for 500.
500 is now 2 weeks from the time you are watching this on the 12th. That means it will be on the 26th. And it happens.
That's your bat watch.
It also happens to be the same day as the Daytona 500. Coincidence. maybe not. But we hope probably to see you at 9:30 Eastern time. It's also the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. So this is when Martin Luther went to town and had a good time. There's a lot of 500s going on this year. It's kind of fun. And we are proud to be among them. Been doing this for quite some time. What's up? Craig. Hey, Chuck, oh, yeah.
I started to say, what were you doing 14 years ago? Starting a podcast.
Not quite 14 years ago.
Not quite. Because
14 years, 2003, 2000.
I don't know.
2003, like 2003, 24. I believe I was trying to teach myself again to play piano. And I got about a year into it with self-taught lessons and went, I can't go any further without paying for lessons. Even had a nice, was an M-Audio keyboard, I think, with a MIDI interface. And I was doing lessons on the computer. Couldn't get much further without paying for lessons. And then podcasting came along and just, it was like a semi-truck hitting a Yugo.
Yeah.
It was all over from there.
And the piano industry has been thankful ever since.
No, if I had dedicated as much time to that piano playing over the last 14 years as I did for podcasting, we'd be having a much different conversation. Actually, you and I may not be having a conversation.
No, I'd be sitting in front of the TV on Sunday night watching The Walking Dead.
Look at how I've enriched your life.
Yeah. Thank you.
We may have crossed paths some other way as well. Okay, we have... Yes! We have a Remember When segment. Only this one I really want to remember.
Oh my gosh, this was hilarious.
Hilarious. It was painful to watch. I couldn't watch the whole thing.
Actually, I honestly did skip through it because whole song and dance thing at the beginning was a little much.
So October 28th, 1992 was the date that Microsoft launched Windows for workgroups.
Well, that in itself is the painful part.
That was not the painful. They did it. It was like their big whole launch. I think this was before Steve Jobs started the whole how to do a product launch campaign. You know, with the stage and the this was painful. It was like watching a Broadway musical.
It's funny you bring that up because I was sitting there going, there is no way Steve Jobs would do this.
No.
Even in his bow tie, colorful you know, presentations that he did pre, you know, black shirt.
If there were elements that I could see our company may have done at the time, you know, given the personalities we have now, who knows? Mm-hmm. Maybe some of the personalities we have now worked at Microsoft and were influenced by this. I mean, it was creative. I'll give them an A for creativity.
I think after watching this, I was actually thankful for PowerPoint presentations. Oh my God, thank you for slides.
And in the pieces, the bits and pieces that I saw that were not singing and dancing or lame scripted sketches, mm-hmm. I'll just send this over to Rachel. And then when she's done reviewing, she can pass it on.
We embedded a video into the database.
We can also, Microsoft Word, I think, was 2.0 at the time. They even ripped on the DOS prompt in the opening. You know, Bill Gates comes out with the package, the starter kit. You know, this says just put. He didn't say disk. Or he said the cartridge or something. He said just put that into the slot, and from the C prompt, type setup.exe, and the actors go, "Oh, not the C prompt."
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh boy.
It was sad. I mean, creative but sad. It's about it's an hour and 2 minutes long. Oh, man. Mm-hmm. Felt like four hours. It's interesting. I didn't watch the whole thing.
If you want, I would say at least scrub through it a little bit. There's some interesting stuff to kind of remember back where we came from.
Bill was young. And they had some revolutionary things in it for the time. Windows.
Actually, there was a point when I thought Windows for Grips was pretty good. And then about 2 weeks after using it, I changed my mind. No, I mean, I thought it was pretty good for a while, but it did show its age, I think, rather quickly. But at the same time, it also hung around a good while, too. I knew lots of people that were using it for a lot longer than they should have.
Well, after 1995, when Windows 95 came out. So this is 3 years before Windows 95. It took them 2 years to develop this.
Mm-hmm.
It added the networking capabilities on top of Windows 3.0, which we used for a good long time. And then it wasn't bad if you coupled it with an NT server, but it was it was okay in small groups of maybe four or five people.
Yeah, peer-to-peer, I think, was a little painful.
It was a little painful, but it worked. It was a step in the right direction, something that we can't fully appreciate today.
Now, one thing I think is also painfully obvious is Microsoft's inability to give a product an acronym that doesn't sound like, you know, they're just stringing letters together.
Like what?
I mean, I'm trying to remember the one example, but they were talking about, oh, and this is the so-and-so 1.0. We just released 2.0. I'm like, who cares?
It was a little producty instead of solutions. Yeah. And that's something that our sales team has been, our messaging has had to change around our platform as well, because we often tend to focus on the technology and not on the solutions or the business problems that we're solving.
Yeah.
That's what customers want to hear. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
So it's easy to do for nerds, and you got to remember this was a bunch of nerds back then.
I understand. I mean, but I think corporate America has grown up a lot since this kind of stuff. But at the same time,
I would hope so.
Even Microsoft, Microsoft's, they've had a history of naming stuff and then versioning, and it gets confusing, especially when you got how many versions of Windows out. See, that's what I'm talking about. Like,
well, and the version numbers keep changing. And maybe that's our question of the week, is what do you find more appealing? A numeric versioning system, a lettered versioning system, named. Did you think Windows XP was any better than Vista? I mean, from a naming standpoint, and then all of a sudden we're back to numbers.
I don't think that they're Microsoft in general. I see they still can't name stuff well. I think Windows 10 makes a lot of sense because it's Windows 10. So I think it's when it's clear, I think it makes sense. Like our products at our work is named after cities around the world.
It is now, and it goes incrementally by letter. So Aspen, Berlin, Calgary, Dublin, Eureka, so on.
Yeah,
that makes sense. But it wasn't always that way. You have to remember that there was an evolution to this. When we first started releasing software, it was summer 2008, winter 2008, spring 2009, and then we started selling internationally, and people in Australia said, this isn't spring. You just came out with this release in March. That's not our spring.
Here's a quote. Here's a direct quote from our Australian customers. Huh?
So we said, oh, we'll make it June 2009 and December 2009. And that worked until we were trying to remain on a three-release-a-year calendar until we realized we were releasing before the product was fully vetted. I mean, it was a different time. It was a much smaller company. The quality control wasn't growing as pains. Robust. Yeah, it was growing pains. And then finally we got on the A, B, C, D, E, F, G bandwagon, which makes you think what's going to happen when we get to the Zulu release or wherever we end up on Z.
Yeah, then we got to go to AA, Aardvark.
No, there's not too many cities in the world that start with double X.
Start doing animals. Right. Hey, by the way, Tim Elliott said Vista was Windows 7 beta. Windows 10 must be called Windows. Oh, no, F you. Windows for work groups.
Do know that XP is an emoticon for like the wincy face.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
We want to give a special
wincy face with his tongue sticking out.
Right. Like you just got punched in the gut. And people use it for 15 years.
Oh, okay. I know John Miller's had experience with that, just like I did.
That's the Patreon music. We want to thank our patrons for bringing you this show. Thank you very much. We want to see you on this list. There are 13 people currently contributing generously, and we would like to count you among them. These people are Kyle Nishioka, Chris MC, Nick St. Gabriel, John Noble, Mike Wills, Alexis Duran, Amy Bowen, Steve Therian, Ben Von Abner Braverman, Saturday Morning Media, Dennis Patnod, and Leon. Thank you very much for your generosity. And
thank you.
They get a special audio edition show of our, some extra talk that we do offline. And they get that, and nobody else does. Well, unless it's somehow being illegally distributed in third world countries, which could be the case. I don't think any of these people are in third world countries, but they could be aliases for them. You know how you can get like the latest James Bond movie the day it's released, or maybe even before, on some crappy DVD?
Yes.
That's how I picture Technorama being distributed in like the Philippines.
Philippines. Subscribe to your podcast here. Yeah.
Some guy out on a street vendor. You can buy the little wooden bongos. You can buy the beanbag snakes or a bootleg CD of our Patreon show for a dollar.
Unfortunately, they might be getting their money's worth then.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
We're kidding. We're trying to get a dollar a show and somehow they're getting two.
Right.
If you want to be part of this crazy crew, go to patreon.com, Technorama Podcast, and there's a link in the show notes. And on our website, just click on the Patreon link, and we will thank you every week until your donations give out. It goes directly towards the cost of this show, bandwidth, hosting, equipment upgrades, software.
Yeah, believe it or not.
Yeah, we don't spend it on beer. There's none of that anymore.
Not really.
Thank you very much, and out with the music. Woohoo! What do we got next? Media Corner! Media Corner, Media Corner, Media Corner. There it is.
Media Corner.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the Media Corner.
I should do this one.
Good news, everyone!
That's right.
There's been a crowdfunded Star Trek DS9 documentary. And it is exceeding their original goal. The creators and stars of Star Trek Deep Space Nine have launched an Indiegogo campaign to produce a documentary about the show. What We Left Behind will tell the story of the third, fourth Star Trek series as told by most of the people who made it. More than that, however, the film has assembled the show's writing team, including Ronald D. Moore, to map out what a mythical eighth season of the show would have looked like. Sadly, the AV Club beat us to the point about how this is basically that Portlandia sketch, but in real life.
I haven't seen the Portlandia sketch.
Neither have I. In just over a day, the project has smashed through its original $150,000 target and pushing toward $200,000. It's something of a vindication for that show. When it launched, it was treated as the redheaded stepchild of the Star Trek universe. Now, after living through Voyager and Enterprise, fans have come to appreciate the show for what it is. Backers can contribute $15 to be able to watch the show when it's available, which is expected to be in about a year's time in February 2018. Go watch the video, What We Left Behind. The embedded video through the show links is a whole lot of fun. They've got people like Armin Shimerman, and Nana Visitor, mm-hmm. Terry Farrell. I'm trying to think. It's not Avery Brooks was not in there, but they did have short clips from Cyric Lofton. He's all grown up, still sounds the same, and you can recognize him. But of course, you know, he's what, 15, 20 years older than when they filmed the show. and the one that I recognized right off the bat,
mm-hmm.
Hana Hate. She's Molly O'Brien, the little girl.
Oh my gosh. Are you serious?
She's grown up. Yeah. As soon as I saw her, I'm like, that has to be Molly. And sure enough, because they say, do you think the fans will fund this? And they turn the camera to this girl working over in the car. They go, oh yeah, they will, because they loved it, or aligned to that effect. And someone says, and who are you? So a lot of fun to watch this. Watch the video that they did. They must have been at a con and had all these people together and said, hey, you know, ahead of time, obviously, this is arranged. Let's go
to the hotel room.
Yeah, that's pretty much. Come on up to the hotel room. We're going to film the Indiegogo thing, because they're all behind this. It was very well orchestrated and very well written and executed just for the promo video. I wish I could have been a fly on the wall at that filming, because I'm sure there's some great outtakes.
Was Clinton right? Adam Nimoy is directing it?
I don't see that in the article anywhere. That
or is
would
he just
be
making that up? Is he making that up?
You know, Clinton, he can be funny about anything.
Wait.
Director Adam Nimoy made For the Love of Spock, while producers 455 Films was behind Chaos on the Bridge, The Captains, and Get a Life. In addition to showing you what the eighth season of DS9 would look like, viewers, it doesn't say specifically that he is. The team behind the documentary has plenty of experience producing Star Trek retrospectives. Director Adam Nimoy. So he'll be on this project, but it doesn't say specifically he's directing this project. At least that's not how I'm reading it. Interesting.
Exclusive. Adam Nimoy offers thoughts on directing DS9 documentary. Thanks, Clinton. He pointed us to a mic.
Wonderful.
Hey, I would not dispute Clinton.
Not when it comes to Star Trek trivia and factoids. Absolutely.
You know, I think I know a good bit about Star Trek. Here comes Clinton.
Wow. Yeah. don't challenge him. No. I just looked at the play clock. We're going to have to hustle here, because I know you still have something you want to talk about. Real quickly, there are some Star Trek soy sauce dishes.
Star Wars.
Sorry. Darth Vader, yeah. Stormtrooper. Wrong picture, dear. There you go. R2-D2 and C-3PO. I'm not sure you're going to get too much sauce out of R2-D2, though. He's just got a few grooves and channels in there. But graphically, these are beautiful.
I think they are pretty cool.
I would have inverted the Stormtrooper. He's got a brown helmet with white eyes, but whatever. They're a lot of fun. Where is the price on these babies? $230 to bring them across the Pacific. They're $100 if you buy them in Japan.
And let's go to the next story.
Yeah, exactly. I think we just washed that one out.
All right. Well, I took Harrison to go see the Lego Batman movie today.
Was everything awesome?
Yeah, pretty much. Actually, well, you saw the Lego movie, right?
Yes.
It was just like that, but centered around Batman. And it had every Batman joke a reference that you could think of thrown in there. It was fantastic. There was just about every villain mm-hmm. that he's ever fought or they've ever mentioned in the comics or the animated series made it in here. So there was a bunch of them that are like, who, you know, but you know, and then they, of course they picked on the 66 Batman. They were referring back to, Batman's previous years. And of course they stepped through every movie, you know, that we've ever seen a Batman. And there was a Lego version of the scenes from all those movies, which was really cool to see.
Oh, far out.
Yeah. It was like, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. And, I was trying to remember if it's better than the Lego movie, but I would certainly say it's on par with that. The humor was great.
It didn't just feel like a money grab.
No, I don't think so. Okay. It was well done. It was well done. It was a good movie. And there were times we saw it, we had each other laughing because of the nature of Lego. Like a lot of the things that they do, just like in the Lego movie, follows mm-hmm. the physics of Legos. You know, where they're walking, they're kind of doing a peg at a time almost, you know, kind of thing, or the way things fall. A few things go outside of that, that physics, but most of it sticks with it, and it's fun. Even explosions, you know, look brickified.
That's fun. So
it was well done, and it looked like the Lego movie, and the humor was really well done. It wasn't like you said, it was, you know, money grab. I don't know. When they make movies to make money, but at the same time, I don't think it was just a crappy knockoff.
Did you see, speaking of making movies and money grabs, did you see they started production on Avengers Infinity War?
Yes. I saw
I think January 23rd filming started.
Yeah, that's about right. So I watched the little video and it got me excited for
it. Yep. Yep.
Because you saw, now you get to see, of course, Robert Downey Jr. and then Tom Holland is playing Spider-Man. He was confirmed to be in the movie.
He's got
accent. Yes, he does. Yeah. And then you saw Chris Pratt walk up. So the Guardians are in it, which I kind of already knew that, seeing stuff around. So yeah, I'm really excited about it.
Spending 10 years to build to this part of the storyline. And there's still, a couple more movies to go?
Yeah.
We have to Guardians of the Galaxy. Spider-Man. Volume 2.
Spider-Man and Black Panther.
And isn't there like another, is there another Thor movie coming out or just was?
Right.
So Ragnarok. That's what it was.
Ragnarok. Thor Ragnarok's coming out November-ish. So we got Spider-Man.
There's all
Guardians.
Yep.
And then Black Panther.
Yep.
Is also coming. So yes.
Whew. I can't keep up with all these.
I know it's getting to be work.
Marvel is going to confuse me, and I'm going to confuse you even more on show 500. Stay tuned for that. We're going to close with our question of the week. What computer game is a classic for you? Ooh, that's a good one. This is going to show some age, and I know all our listeners, many of our listeners fall within a certain demographic. So this should be very interesting, and especially the outliers where we get somebody maybe 20 years younger than you and me, Craig. What's a classic to them?
I know. When I start thinking of classics, I'm thinking like arcade games, you know.
What if we get a listener who's like 70 years old who predates modern computers?
Well, it would be a computer game.
Their computer game might just be like ENIAC telling them where to move the chess pieces.
I'll tell you what's my classic. I'll tell you right now. You ready?
Go for it.
Do you remember, and I hope my old friend Robert Fisher's listening because he's the one that kind of turned me on to this. It was the Star Trek game where you have a little Enterprise and there's like quadrants all around, and then you have like a Klingon in a square and another square. You know, so you kind of warp between little.
This is a video game?
Yes, I'm not.
Or a computer game? Okay.
It's a computer game. It wasn't very action oriented. But like you can be in a quadrant. There's I'm trying to remember the actual name of it, but it's, you know, and you can jump so many squares and then you go to the next quadrant mm-hmm. and you don't know how many Klingons are in that quadrant, that kind of thing. What is that?
All right, you go look it up. We'll find out next week.
Actually, John, I would say Quake 2 is also a good example. I played the crap out of that. John Miller saying Quake 3. I said Quake 2 because when we started our ISP,
mm-hmm.
and I had the night before we opened, I had the T1 all to myself. No, nobody was dialing in on the modems. It was basically I had the T1 right at my fingertips, basically on my computer. I played Quake 2. Oh, man.
Fast for the day.
My ping times were so low. It was crazy.
All right. One final reminder. There is no show next week. So if you're looking for us live on Facebook on the 19th, we won't be there. We will be making big plans for show 500 the following week. You know, we've got guests to fly in from all over the world. We had to book those flights in advance. And, you know, well, I'm making this stuff up now. We do have big plans for show number 500 and want to see you there. So join us on the 26th, 9:30 Eastern Time live, or you can catch us on the podcast as always, which comes out the following Wednesday. It'll be what, the 29th. There is no 29th of February this year. So March 1st. We appreciate your support. Thank you for the show. Let's play that go away music. There it is. Call us on the listener line, 707-530-2428. We'd love to hear from you or send us an email, technoramachuckchat.com. There's always comments on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, and we love it. We want to hear from you, and consider being a Patreon patron. That's what we're here for, to take your money. Wait. I mean,
yeah, well, yeah.
You know how many cars drive by that homeless person on the corner and don't give them a dollar? Don't be that guy.
Give us their dollar.
Right.
Keep it. Give it to us.
We better get out of here before we get in trouble.
I know, right?
Tell a friend about Facebook. Share this video, et cetera, et cetera. Till then, give me a binary high five.
101. Bye, everybody.
Please don't touch my stapler. This is my stapler. I swear, if I have to listen to Technorama one more time, I'm gonna burn this place to the ground. I'm listening to my podcast at an acceptable level.